Free Geek Vancouver needs donations to remain in business. They have announced that they are in danger of closing and need your help to keep the doors open. Since 2006, the organization has helped divert over 780 tons of e-waste from landfills, rebuilt over 4,200 computers, and trained over 9,700 volunteers. Free Geek Vancouver serves the Metro Van community in four important ways: electronic reuse and recycling, providing free and low-cost computers to the public and nonprofit organizations, low-cost tech support every Wednesday night by donation, and training programs for people of all ages and skill levels. Free Geek Vancouver asks those who have financial means to consider making a donation to support their continued existence. Donations can be made online on their website, freegeekvancouver.org, or in person at 1820 Pandora Street.
We're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to Animal Voices Radio Show. Today is July 19th, 2019, and I'm your host, Carol Davies McIntosh. Our program today is brought to you by our sponsor, Edible Planet. Edible Planet is a Vancouver-based education campaign and TV series to teach people about the world's most powerful edible plants and the fascinating people who bring them to market. Food is the world's most powerful tool to share the wealth and chronic illness, regreen the planet, and create lasting world peace. Now is the time for a plant-based economy, because on this big, beautiful, edible planet, the food we eat can change the world. Well, today we're going to do a deep dive into a relatively new organization called Nation Rising. Nation Rising actually may be more of a movement than an organization. It was formed in 2017 by some folks who think it is high time for the grassroots to mobilize, and for citizens who do not want their tax dollars to go to helping big companies like Maple Leaf Foods, who actually were granted $62 million tax dollars last year to build a new chicken plant, that is, slaughterhouse, in London, Ontario. Nation Rising is calling on citizens who care about animals, their own health, and the environment to speak up to their members of parliament and to demand a change. We have interviews with three of their principal members today, so stay tuned. First, we have a short clip for you. Here's one of the speakers at Nation Rising's demonstration on Parliament Hill last month. Her name is Kaya Juge, and she is 11 years old.
One of the things every child in Canada does every morning is sing the national anthem. One of the lines in our anthem refers to our country as the true north, strong and free. And I think to myself, who's free? Not the animals we share this country with. We breed them into existence, torture them, and use them in the short 6 months of life we give them, and then brutally slaughter them and eat their dead bodies. The Canadian public certainly isn't free. Canadians are not given the respect they deserve or freedom of choice when they are lied to about what happens to the animals they are encouraged to consume daily by the very institutions that claim they are here to guide and protect us. We are lied to through false advertising and dangerous public health policies. We're lied to when our Prime Minister tells us that carbon tax and reducing our use of plastic is the most powerful thing each of us can do to stop climate change, when we know the most powerful thing each of us can do is go vegan and put an end to animal agriculture. Now, I'm a child. I should not need to be here. The thousands of kids all over the world who are marching and speaking and protesting and asking for real change should be outside having fun with friends, playing, knowing that they are safe and protected by the adult in charge. I should be having a childhood where I can simply let the adults be in charge because I can trust that they're doing the right thing. But here I am, standing on Parliament Hill, protesting the adults in charge. They are not acting like grown-ups. They are not being responsible, and they're not doing the right thing for the people, the planet, or the animals. And finally, I look to you, Justin Trudeau, to our government, to the leaders of our country, and ask that you help me shift our population to a plant-based diet, and in doing so, bring healing to our earth, health to our people, and freedom to the animals. Thank you.
Well, if you like that impassioned speech, you can meet this young environmental activist, Kia Juge, on Saturday, August 17th at Meatless Meetup. Kia will be speaking along with Lawrence Taylor, a Green Party candidate, and environmental expert Chad Wilkinson. Come along and chat about how dietary choices impact our environment. This event is being held 7 to 9 p.m. at Vancouver Co-Housing, 1733 East 33rd Avenue, Vancouver. Please bring vegan snacks to share, and you can sign up at meetup.com under Meatless Meetups. First up, I'll be speaking with Jenny Henry. Jenny has a background in social policy, philosophy, research, and nonprofit organizations. She's been an animal rights activist for 6 years. She's also a single mom. Jenny's daughter has been one of the inspirations for Nation Rising. Jenny wants a better world for her daughter, the animals, and generations to come. Jenny, I understand that you are the original founder of Nation Rising, which was created in 2017. Can you tell us the story behind the inception of the organization?
I'm an animal rights activist, and so I see the impact of animal agriculture, the impact it has on animals. But as I got more involved as an activist, I started to learn, you know, about the impact it also has on our health and on our planet as well. And I started to think about, like, how does an industry that's causing so much harm continue to not just survive but thrive? And the answer, when you start to look into it, is these massive handouts from the government in the form of animal agriculture subsidies. Without these massive handouts, this industry that's currently taking the lives of billions of animals, contributing to heart disease and cancer, and literally destroying the planet that we have to live on, would collapse. So that's huge. I mean, when thinking strategically about the bigger picture and how we can take on this massive industry, that's huge. So, of course, the next question then was, well, how do we do it? How do we end animal agriculture subsidies? Well, then it was like, okay, well, if we bring together all these people who care about this issue, individuals, experts, organizations who care about health, animal rights, and, you know, the planet, then we could actually build a coalition strong enough that we couldn't be ignored, and we could force the debate, not just on a social level, but on a political level, and we could win. And there's no question from my standpoint that we would win, in fact, because the case against animal agriculture subsidies is so strong from all sides. Like, using our taxes to subsidize this industry is just wrong. So that's where the idea came from, and the idea to focus on this one thing and to focus on building a coalition to tackle this one problem came from, and that's Nation Rising. Yeah.
Okay. So is that what you mean?
The name kind of came from this idea that what we need is a revolution or an uprising of the people to sort of take back political power. It's also sort of like represents the future and where we hope to be. So a place where policies are not created based on industry interests, but take into account the people and the planet and the animals. It's sort of like a rising above the old and a creating of the world we want to live in.
How did you get other individuals and organizations on board?
Yeah, so that was one of our strategies, is to build a coalition to reach out to all these other organizations. And so we started doing that right away. We got our website up and we started reaching out to all types of organizations, animal rights and people who are fighting for the environment and the health. And we basically just explained our platform. Having our demands was really important, having our demands listed on our website so people understand exactly what we're asking for. And, you know, lots of people were, right. You know, they agree with what we're trying to achieve. And so they became what we call allies. And so we list them on our website as allies, and they promote things for us. And yeah, it's sort of our strategy for becoming stronger as a coalition.
Now, the other organizations, I noticed that you have some that are, they look like a lot of them are animal activists, animal advocacy groups, but some of them are actually environmental groups.
Yeah. So,
are they on board because of the environmental impact of animal agriculture, or are they also kind of got one foot in the animal activist?
Well, I think
camp?
Some of them are just environmental. So we really wanted to make it. Like, we wanted to tackle this from three sides. We realized that, like, we're not going to win if we're just focusing on animal rights. And likely we're not going to win if we're just focusing on health. But if we're focusing on animal rights and health and the environment, I mean, it's pretty strong. So some of these organizations are just focused on the environment. Extinction Rebellion, for example, is one of our allies, and they actually did an event with us after our march and rally on Parliament Hill this year. And they're just focused on the environment. So, they're in there. We have the Center for Nutrition Studies, which is also, you know, an organization concerned about health. It is very animal rights heavy, but we are trying to bring in those other types of organizations as well. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, it's all related, isn't it? And I realize this is a fairly new organization. You're probably still going through lots of different bumps and stuff like that. But what key things have you learned so far along the way about developing this type of advocacy?
It's fairly new for all of us. So we're definitely learning as we go. And this is our second year. And we're starting now to get into the lobbying aspect of it. And so we learned, you know, like when is a good time to have a lobby day, for example. This year, our lobby day was like, didn't really work out all that great. But we did manage to pull off a very successful mass lobbying campaign where we had people all over Canada taking our lobbying document to their MPs and meeting with them and asking for change. So that really worked out well. But we're definitely learning as we go, and we're constantly meeting and you know, strategizing and changing our strategy based on the things that we're learning as we go. We have lots of big, exciting plans for the future based on our experiences so far.
So what happened? You said it didn't work out very
well.
Well,
it was just really bad timing. We wanted people to come to Parliament Hill and meet with their MPs there for our lobby day. But unfortunately, it was bad timing. So most people could not book meetings with their MPs. We did. We managed to. The co-organizers did. And we actually had a press conference as well on Parliament Hill. But most of the other people were having trouble booking that meeting. So next year we're going to change the date. We're going to do it earlier in the year and get it going way in advance and make sure that people can get those meetings booked.
So you mentioned also that you had another sort of Canada-wide day where people would go into their individual ridings, into their individual MPs.
Yeah, so it wasn't actually a day. It was months long. Months long, we were promoting it on Facebook, and it spread like wildfire. Okay. It was actually really successful. We're asking people to take pictures of them meeting with their MPs and holding up the document. And so we had lots of people sending in those pictures and the stories to help inspire other people too. Because I think it's a little bit scary for some people thinking of going to meet their MP. So we tried to make it really as easy as possible. We created the document. We created a very straightforward argument that's very hard to refute. You take it with you, go meet with your MP. We show you where to find your MP. And then we ask people to take pictures to help inspire other and tell their stories to help inspire other people to do it. And it worked really well. We had tons of people going in and meeting with their MPs. And they were really receptive to it. Because, I mean, what we were asking for was not not the same demands that we have on our website. What we were asking for is just for them to align their subsidies with their own healthy eating recommendations, because Health Canada changed the food guide this year. Mm-hmm. So it was very straightforward, something that most MPs could get on board with. And so that worked out really well. We plan to definitely do more of that.
That's interesting. So, and we'll talk about the food guide a little bit later, but if you were asking the people to go in and speak specifically to that aspect of animal agriculture instead of bringing up the environmental piece or the,
it was just, strategic
animal rights piece.
For the time being, we thought this was the best case that we could mm-hmm. bring to them. And this is the, you know, we want to think strategically. We can't go in there and say, you know, end all animal agriculture subsidies, because they can't do that. It's not something that any MP will ever get on board with. But since they made this massive change to the food guide, and, you know, we have a pretty good argument that if you're going to change the food guide, now you have to help people actually eat the foods you're telling them to eat. And, you know, and the what they're predicting for 2019 is the price of meat is going to go down, and the price of fruits, vegetables, and plant-based protein is all going to go up. So this is a very strong case for, hey, maybe you should switch the funding or switch the subsidies away from that and towards this. And the government is actually mandated to create those policies to help people eat the foods that they're telling them to eat. So this is exactly in line with what they're supposed to be doing. So it worked out well. And let's hope, you know, I mean, people, we're still asking people to meet with their MP, so we're hoping it continues and that it really has an impact. And also because, you know, it's an election year. I'm hoping it becomes, so we'll see.
Yes. 3 months. 3 months from now, we'll be going to the polls again, and we should at least know what the candidates stand for. And often this type of thing isn't brought up. It's not specified. Now, you have Nation Rising has three demands. Now, I was curious about a couple of things, so I want you to go over what they are for us. But why did you term them as demands instead of requests or suggestions? Or the language is very forthright.
If you think about it, right now our government is using our tax dollars to subsidize an industry that's literally killing us. From our perspective, it's more than irresponsible. It's it's criminal, actually, what they're doing. And so you don't ask your government to stop that politely. You demand it. They need to stop it now. It's wrong, and it needs to end. That's why the language is strong. It's meant to be strong. It's meant to be, we're not going to be apologetic about it. We're just going to say it as it is. We're also, of course, in the middle now of the sixth mass extinction, right? We're wiping out species at an unprecedented rate. It's crazy. In 7 years, there could be no wild animals left at all. And there's global warming happening. And they say, unless we make massive changes soon, you know, the planet won't survive for future generations. So the other point is that we don't have time to be polite and hope for change. We need to demand it. Okay. So the demands are to stop subsidizing animal agriculture. That's the first demand. So stop the multi-billion dollars that go to animal agriculture. The second one is to make healthy food affordable. So, and that could most likely involve also creating additional subsidies to ensure healthy, organic, plant-based food is made affordable for everyone. And that includes indigenous and low-income communities. We want everybody to be included in that. And the third demand is to help farmers transition to plant-based farming. So we want this to be an inclusive solution that takes into account all aspects. So we're not just going to say end subsidies and, you know, that's it. Obviously, if we're going to make a successful transition, and we do want it to be successful, then we have to stop the subsidies, we have to create new ones, and we also have to help farmers. We don't want to just leave farmers out in the cold. They're in those industries because they're trying to feed their families, and they need help to get out of those industries. Most of the times they've invested so much money into chicken farming or egg farming or dairy farm or whatever it is, passed through generations, and it's difficult to get out. So we need the government to set up the advisory boards and give them a financial assistance and help make that transition.
Okay. What are Nation Rising's key strategies for getting there? You mentioned lobbying, and by that you mean going to visit your MP and making some demands or making some your presence known and taking some literature for
them
to read. Yeah,
so we have basically three strategies, three main areas where we're focusing our energy. And one of them, right, is to put pressure on the government to create change. So that includes mass lobbying campaigns, and we're also hoping to hire a professional lobbyist and hold lobby days in Ottawa. Mass lobby days where, you know, hundreds of people show up and we're all lobbying our government on the same day. So those types of things where we're putting pressure on the government. We're also, one of our main areas is to just raise awareness. Most of the Canadian public is affected by this. I mean, if you think about the amount of people who either, you know, I've had a family member who's died of heart disease or cancer, you know, people who are concerned about the environment. I mean, the planet belongs to all of us and our children, or the people who care about, you know, welfare of animals. It affects everybody. So we're trying to raise awareness about first of all, that the government is using our tax dollars to subsidize these industries or, you know, this animal agriculture, and also the effects it has on us, because there should be outrage. There should be outrage from everybody. So that's the other one. And the third one is to build coalitions. So we're reaching out to ally organizations. We're building coalitions with experts and organizations and individuals across Canada who are concerned about these issues in order to build a movement that's so strong that the government can't ignore us. And we're also going to start building coalitions with farmers as well and bring in something called the RAP Coalition, which is the Rancher Advocacy Program. So it's something that exists in the States right now, and we're hoping to bring it to Canada. And so it's basically, you know, a coalition it would help farmers to transition out of traditional animal farming and towards plant-based farming.
Now, ranchers, does that just mean ranchers?
No, I guess I think it was named
cattle?
That because she was a rancher, the woman who started this, Renee King. She runs Rowdy Girl mm-hmm. Sanctuary.
Right, she spoke
yes,
at
she
your
did. It's, but it's anyone.
Press conference.
It's anyone
right?
in animal agriculture who is stuck and wants to get out.
So when you look at lobbying and building the coalition, are those proven strategies in terms of making social
change? Well,
we're sort
of looking at what the other side is doing. And what animal agriculture
okay.
is doing. So if you look, they actually published this online, you can see which industries the majority of lobbyists belong to. And it's like the dairy farmers and egg mm-hmm. farmers. And so they're meeting with their government. And unfortunately, because most people are afraid to meet with their government and they don't think that they have any political power and they don't. So the only people that the government is now hearing from are people who are in the industry. And so policies are being developed that benefit them. So that's why this is one of our strategies, is to create mass lobbying that so the government is hearing from us and it becomes an issue and they realize that they're, you know, that people care about this and it becomes a political issue. Yeah. So we're constantly okay. researching and learning and evolving and changing our strategies. But for now, this is where we are.
Good. So, well, it sounds like you've thought them out, and thinking about hiring a lobbyist it sounds like a great idea. Where are your funds coming from? Is the
yes.
coalition helping
yeah,
you?
Yeah. So not everybody okay. who is an ally member necessarily donates. We just we've been doing fundraising, and we have some donors who have been helping us out.
Good. So, you know, there's so many calls to action right now for animals and for the environment. And I guess, you know, I think some people are feeling a bit stretched thin. So why should someone focus their time and attention with Nation Rising? What's your sales pitch
right.
for that? Your elevator sales pitch.
I totally see that. I know there's lots of things going on. There's always lots of things going on. But I guess the reason why I focus on Nation Rising is because, like I said, the reason why this industry is surviving, it's because of the animal agriculture subsidies. And if we can get those subsidies to stop, the industry will collapse. Like, it cannot survive without those subsidies. It's not sustainable. Without those subsidies, a burger, for example, might cost $20 or something, and nobody's going to buy that. It's just, it will collapse without those subsidies, and it will have massive, so it's like one thing that you could do that would have the greatest benefit for the animals, for the planet, and for our health.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM is political.
Co-op Radio is poetry.
Co-op Radio is tango.
Co-op Radio is gay.
Ecology.
Comedy.
Feminism.
Philosophy.
Yoga.
Reggae.
Bicycles.
Trade unions.
Gospel.
Live.
Local.
Asian.
African.
Vancouver Co-op Radio is community.
Your community.
Vancouver Co-op Radio.
CFRO.
100.5 FM.
All different.
All the time.
Next up, we'll speak with Jeff Donkervoort. Although Jeff is currently involved with many animal advocacy groups, he joined Nation Rising because he says that political activism is underrepresented in the animal rights movement. Jeff contributes to Nation Rising with research and statistics. He lives in London, Ontario. Jeff, can you first of all tell me a little bit of your background? How did you get involved with this?
Well, first of all, I'm vegan, so...
That's a good start.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've been an activist with a bunch of different groups over the last few years, and I was just kind of felt like I was spinning my tires with some of the groups. And when Nation Rising kind of approached me to help out with things, I did a little bit more research on it, and I found that, you know, this is something that I can kind of sink my teeth into here right now and contribute in the best way that I can.
So you're, I understand you have a lot of expertise in the animal agriculture subsidies area, or you know a lot about it.
Yeah, I'm the nerd.
You're the nerd. Good. So can you, I find it a little bit confusing where the subsidies come from, who decides on who gets the subsidies, what they're used for, if the farmers can do whatever they want with them. Can you give us a general explanation of what animal agriculture subsidies are?
Absolutely. And I think it's deliberate to keep things kind of muddled up. There is no one source of like a site you can go to, or like a web page, or a person you can talk to that actually has all of these answers. It takes a lot of research through many, many different sources to actually come up with even a partial picture of what's going on in animal agriculture right now. It is really deeply embedded. There's a big, deep rabbit hole where money is just being funneled into. So a subsidy is actually defined as money given by a government to keep prices artificially low. But in Canada, that doesn't really give you the whole picture. I mean, it does in places like Europe and the United States. They actually have direct subsidies that you can see that kind of taking place. So I find focusing on the term subsidy doesn't really do justice to all of the taxpayer-funded handouts that make up animal agriculture's money. For example, Carol, are you familiar with supply management?
A little bit. But I think it would be useful for you to expand on that.
Absolutely. There's many people that have maybe heard the term in the news before, but aren't familiar with what it entails. And it is basically a Canadian cartel-like system, and it's composed of five groups: dairy, chicken, turkey, egg, and broiler hatching egg. Those are the five groups that comprise supply management.
Okay.
It works basically by controlling the amount of production domestically, including fixing prices, and also imposes stiff penalties on foreign goods, which are known as tariffs, which actually prevents healthy competition. So it's a protected market within Canada. So this is an ongoing benefit.
So does that mean if I'm an egg farmer and I want to sell my eggs for, you know, less than what my neighbor's selling them for, I can't do that, or I'm fined if I do that?
The prices are set by markets on a monthly or bi-monthly basis, and you cannot do that.
Okay.
No, there is no free market sort of thing. The farmers markets might be a little bit separate where they might be able to get away with some of that sort of stuff, but it's not. But so supply management, it's an ongoing benefit that our federal government gives to these five groups. These prices are actually set artificially high to ensure that huge profits are made. And really, at the same time, it disproportionately hurts lower income families who spend a larger share of household income on these so-called food items.
Right.
I mean, what other business gets to just sell their products at whatever price they want without worrying about normal, you know, market indicators?
Right.
So that is an actual benefit that can't really be defined as a subsidy, but is a benefit, you know, grain farmers and that sort of stuff do not get as well, too. So basically the subsidy in this case, if you want to define it, it's being paid directly to these producers from the consumers through higher prices, and it's all endorsed by our government.
So that's one way that farmers get more money for their animal products. What other, are there other things, or like, are there cash money that gets flowed into some of these places?
Likely. So there are other examples that we can get into as well. The biggest ones, honestly, are the newest trade deals that Canada has signed with different countries. So,
right. Okay.
I mean, one of the biggest ones is the CPTPP, which actually stands for the Comprehensive and Progressive Trans-Pacific Partnership. So it's a group of 11 countries that have gotten together and signed a deal to try and eliminate tariffs.
Right.
It's an 11-country deal that was ratified by 7 of them so far. The U.S. actually hasn't. Trump took them out of this. So the biggest trader in this right now hasn't actually agreed to it, but 7 is enough so far. So basically, dairy in this case, Canadian dairy, what it means to them is that there's now an increase in access for foreign products on our store shelves of about 3.25%.
Okay.
But this doesn't actually mean that there's a loss of sales. It just means that, say, out of 100 dairy products on store shelves, 3 of them can be from these signatory countries before tariffs are added to them.
Okay, now how does that help Canadian farmers?
Well, it doesn't help Canadian farmers, but the other side of this deal is that Canadian farmers now have access to these other countries that have signed on to this deal as well, too.
To other markets, and, then. Okay.
Exactly, and the farmers don't like to actually talk about that. You don't see much about that in the news. You actually have to start digging really deep into some of these sites, see the sort of advantages that they're being given in these foreign markets. So they may give up 3 out of 100, you know, plots on our shelves, but they have nearly unfettered access to these other countries. So they are making out big time on these deals, but they don't like you to think about that.
Now, beyond the marketing aspect of it, I have read about actual money that is going to farmers to help them with their fuel costs, for instance, or that sort of thing. Those are subsidies too as well, aren't they?
Absolutely. I mean, they could be considered government assistance. There's many different programs out there that encompass that as well. There's literally 20 or 30 different programs out there that farmers can apply to. And to be fair, it's not just animal agriculture that can apply for it. Plant-based farmers can actually apply for a lot of this as well. But when you start looking at, you know, the Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada's website, you can see where all of this money is being spent. And the bulk of it is going to animal agriculture. Actually, just getting back to that CPTPP deal, the government has actually promised the supply-managed group, those 5 groups, $3.9 billion of our taxpayer money.
Of our money. So how would they apply that?
That's a good question. There is no way that anyone can see right now how that's going to be applied. There is no even guaranteed law. Again, we're just talking about shelf space being given up. There is no proven loss to any of these farmers at this point. But their lobby groups have lobbied the federal government, and the government has agreed to give $3.9 billion. And actually the current government knocked it down by $400 million. The previous administration, Harper, was going to give $4.3 billion.
Okay. So even before the trade deals were signed, Harper was offering that to them.
So $350 million has already been given out. So dairy got all of that money.
Right. Now, if I'm a farmer, a dairy farmer, how do I get my chunk of that $3.9 billion?
Well, the lobby groups will do most of the legwork for them. So the farmers pay into these groups, like Dairy Farmers of Canada, Dairy Farmers of Ontario, to lobby on their behalf, to do this sort of legwork on their behalf. The way that the money is broken up is basically up to these lobby groups to determine who gets what. The processors and the producers, you know, split portions of it. $250 million was given to the farmers themselves to automate their operations.
Okay.
Which the government has claimed they want to create more jobs within this. That's how they justify these money. But by automating operations, you're not going to create more jobs.
Exactly.
You're actually going to moving jobs away mm-hmm. from this. But in every single press release that you see, it's always about job creation. Mm-hmm. So, but what 100 million of that 350 million was actually given to dairy processors, which are massive companies like Saputo, mm-hmm. AgroPure, Parmalat, and they were given $100 million of this.
And they're making millions and millions of dollars already.
Well, Saputo's revenue was $11 billion in 2017. Their net income was $730 million.
We're not talking about the little ma-and-pa operation that is squeaking by with their, you know, herd of dairy cows or something. We're talking about huge corporations.
Both are receiving these for sure, but I mean, it's definitely corporate welfare when you see these billion-dollar companies receiving these mm-hmm. funds. And I mean, Maple Leaf is another shining example of that. The slaughterhouse that's being built here in London, they received $56 million. And I mean, Maple Leaf doesn't need that sort of money. They're a billion-dollar company as well.
Right. Now, didn't some of that money come from the province and some from the federal government?
Yep, that's correct. There was a split on that as well, too. So it isn't just a federal government
right.
issue here. So that, I mean, Maple Leaf did $7 billion in sales in 2017-2018 combined. Why are we giving them $55 million? You don't have to be vegan to be outraged by this.
No, you just have to be a taxpayer.
You have to be a taxpayer. Outraged. I mean, we should be rallying yep. everyone around these sorts of things here, right? This is an egregious spending of our money. We could go to so much better things than building a slaughterhouse.
Well, I think so often that the publicity is that it's the poor, you know, multi-generational farmer that's out there that's just slogging away trying to eke out a living that is suffering. And I think that has been promoted over and over again in our society. And that's what, when people think about taking subsidies away from farmers, they think of basically taking the food off their tables. And I know that's not what you're talking about. But I think that's where most people's heads go when we say take the subsidies away.
Absolutely. That's part of what we're doing, is trying to educate people on that as well, trying to change that narrative that these lobby groups like to throw out there with their press releases.
Exactly.
$100 million funds that we spend every year, trying to convince people that we're going to be attacking, you know, individual farmers, that sort of stuff. That's not the case. We have a plan in place to try and get people out of this sort of thing. We understand that they're stuck in it. You can't just hit them with a stick without offering them a carrot.
So you mentioned one example of that the Liberals had cut down that subsidy to $3.9 billion that the Conservatives had listed at $4.3, was it? Is there a pattern to that? Do we see different governments, different political parties spending more money for agriculture subsidies than others?
No, and we're definitely a nonpartisan group. We really don't.
No, I know you're not. I know you're not. But it's interesting.
One example of them not down by $400 million. There really is no clear favorite being played here.
Now, you mentioned right out of the gate here that you can't just go to one website and get a bunch of information on agriculture subsidies, that you have to sort of look through many, many websites, and probably it's deeply buried. But you did mention one website. Was that Stats Canada or was that an agriculture?
Oh, absolutely. Well, Stats Canada is definitely a great site for a lot of statistics to do with like farm gate receipts and that sort mm-hmm. of stuff. You go to the Agri-Food Canada site itself, which is www.agr.gc.ca. There are all sorts of links to media releases, funding initiatives, issues that we're dealing with like biosecurity, trade agreement. That is a really great source to try and pull some information from.
Great. Thank you very much. Coming up, an interview with Ben King. Ben is a co-founder of Nation Rising and co-host of the Live Again podcast. He holds a degree in sociology, focusing on social movements and social change. He's a single father living in Cambridge, Ontario, with his two daughters. Ben, you're stating at Nation Rising, is stating that the government should help farmers to transition away from the animal-based agriculture. I'm wondering why you see this as a government job rather than the farmers having to do it on their own, or the farmers' coalitions having to do it on their own?
Well, I mean, if the farmers are left to do it on their own, then they're not going to do it. We have a government that is constantly preaching climate action, climate action, climate action. We need to take this seriously. And you can't be taking it seriously when you're giving literally billions of dollars every year to one of the leading causes of climate change. So it's our government's responsibility. Our government is elected to take care of us. And so it is up to them to do what they can to take care of us and to take care of this planet and to actually follow through on what they're saying. You know, you can't just say, oh, we need to take climate change seriously and then not actually do anything about it or do things that are making it worse. I mean, this is also a government that just built a pipeline through First Nations territories as well, while saying, you know, we need to take climate change seriously. The day after they announced that a climate emergency.
Right. And then they approved that trans.
So we just want them to put our money, not their money, our money.
Right. Our money.
Where their mouth is and actually spend it right. And I mean, the money's there because they're giving, we know that there's billions of dollars, you know, $6 to $8 billion every year going to animal agriculture. Let's just spend it more wisely.
So what kinds of transitions do you think would be available for farmers to continue to make a living and, you know, not have a down season, but continue to be able to make their money and raise their children?
There's multiple different crops. I mean, there's, you know, plant-based protein is becoming huge. Pea protein is becoming massive. There's all kinds of different farming that is on the rise. We're not just anti-farming. You know, we know that people need to eat and we need to help these farmers, because I actually talked to a dairy farmer who I mentioned this to, and he said, Ben, most people that are dairy farmers aren't dairy farmers because they chose dairy farming. They inherited this. They grew up, you know, they're the sixth generation dairy farmer.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all they have. This is how they feed their family. Without this, they go broke. They go bankrupt. They're in this cycle. They're trapped. They can't get out. And so if you actually gave them an opportunity to get out, you will find all kinds of dairy farmers that will take it. Now, he was just speaking about dairy, but I mean, I know the pig slaughter industry would collapse without government subsidies. It can't sustain itself. So you would find people in those industries that would be like, yeah, great. And dairy farming, from the conversation I had, it's hard work. Right? I mean, these aren't 9-to-5 jobs.
No,
these are people that are working, you know, 12, 14 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And if they could get out, you know, make a good living, take care of their family without having to do that, they would. But our government just needs to help them do that.
So how do you see that happening? Do you see, like, the government setting up a fund for farmers that want to transition? Or what do you see as the logistics of that?
Well, yeah, I'd expect the money, because, I mean, we know they have the money. They can donate the resources to that. But there would have to also be some program. There would have to be some education. There would have to be people with, you know, with an educate or an agriculture background,
mm-hmm.
that can help, that can put together. I mean, you know, we need some smart people in the agriculture sector that can put together, you know, plans. This isn't something that us as a group are going to say, you know, here, we've got it all laid out. This is exactly how it has to happen. There has to be a dialogue.
Right.
Okay. We, you know, we'd love to sit down and talk with the government and people in the agriculture sector and talk to them about what's the best way to do this. Okay. We know this needs to be done. Our planet's dying. You know, we can't afford to feed our children the healthy foods that are in our food guide. Let's come up with a plan. And we start a dialogue and we come up with an idea together.
Okay. So Nation Rising doesn't have an outline, really, that you would share with the government right now?
Not specifically, no. Because I think it'd be kind of arrogant to go to them and say, this is how it has to be done. And they're going to say, well, what's you know, where'd you get your master's in agriculture?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm in sociology, so I think that's a little arrogant to just assume that we have all the answers, and we don't necessarily have all of the answers, but we know it can be done, and we have to sit down and discuss a plan, and we want farmers to have an input on this. We don't want to tell farmers what to do. We want to talk to them about it.
When you're approaching your MP or when you're lobbying, how do you approach it to say, we want to have a dialogue? Are you forthright about what you would like to see in terms of animal agriculture farmers transitioning to either plant-based or some other kind of industry that they could get into?
Yeah, I mean, we're open. We're not trying to hide anything. So, you know, tell your MP if you meet with your MP, like, look, this is something that needs to happen. I met with my MP and we didn't agree on a lot of things, but when I talked about that point, when I mentioned, you know, our government needs to help, he's like, you know what? I never thought of that. That's an excellent idea. Maybe we should look into that. And, you know, after a little bit of back and forth, I mean, he was polite. He was a politician. He wants to get elected. He wasn't rude, but, you know, you could tell there was disagreements.
Mm-hmm.
But that point, you know, we didn't just come up with this and think, oh, this is some far-fetched idea. Helping farmers transition to more sustainable farming makes sense.
It does make sense. It's just, it seems like a big task, and it seems like it's a very complex task. And I guess personally, my fear would be that it would take years and years of studying and committee work and all of that kind of stuff before they would actually come up with something.
Well, we're not naive. We know this isn't, you know, we go in and meet with an MP and we say, hey, this needs to change. And then all of a sudden everybody says, yeah, you're right. And then 6 weeks later, we've got a new plan. We know this is a long haul. We know this is a big ask, but just because something is difficult, doesn't mean it's not right to fight for. It's necessary. Like Jenny said, it's like our planet's dying. We don't have time to ask politely or say, hey, could you maybe please consider this? Like, we have to demand that this gets done. And yeah, it may take a while. You know, we don't have a lot of time. So if it's going to take a while, we should get on it right now.
Right. So you mentioned that you were speaking to that one dairy farmer. Do you know of Canadian farmers who are currently wanting to transition away from animal agriculture and feel like they can't?
Unfortunately, there's not, it's difficult for us to have a lot of dialogue with farmers, but I assume that there's, you know, a comfort level, you know, they're getting the money. They're worried that, you know, there's this radical group out there that's demanding, you know, their money is taken away from them. And that's not necessarily what we're asking. We're asking for it diverted somewhere else for them. But yeah, we haven't had a whole lot, but we'd love to sit down with dairy farmers or any animal agriculture farmers and chat with them. But unfortunately, the doors are pretty closed at this point.
Okay, so that's maybe something for the future that maybe could happen.
Oh, absolutely. If anybody listening has any contacts with anybody that would be interested in chatting about it, whether it's, you know, anonymously or on the record or whatever, somebody that either maybe somebody that has changed and wants to tell a story or somebody that, you know, even knows someone else that's struggling, we'd love to chat about what they think a good plan would be.
Bring the farmers in, maybe.
I just wanted to mention the Rancher Advocacy Program. We're hoping to bring that to Canada, and they are developing a framework for helping farmers transition, and also have it on our website so farmers know that they can reach out to us, and we will help them by providing guidance to make that transition. That's something that's sort of in the works and hopefully is going to happen. And so, you know, eventually we would have that guidance for farmers, and the government should be funding it.
In the States, that's privately funded, isn't it?
Yes, right now it is.
It's all donation.
Right, okay.
So the idea is for us all to work together, right? So if we work with the people who are already doing this in the States, I mean, why reinvent the wheel? If they figured out a way to get farmers to transition away from animal agriculture and towards plant-based farming, well, we're going to work with them and develop that framework and hopefully get the government eventually to look at what we're doing and say, oh, they've found something that works, and then put their money there to support it.
I know we've talked about the 2019 Canada Food Guide a couple of times in this interview, but I'd like to just ask if you know the answer to this question. Will we have enough plant-based protein to feed our nation if some of the farmers don't transition based on what the Canada Food Guide is telling us to do?
Even at this rate where we're at right now?
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that, but really it's supply and demand. If we're running out of fruits and vegetables, then, you know, there'll probably be a transition. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, what the best way to do it would be, instead of growing so many crops to feed cattle and pigs and chickens, is to grow plants, grow fruits and vegetables for us.
For people. Right.
Yeah, it's really not that complicated.
No, it's really not.
I know the other side will make it sound like it's not easy to do, but you just grow fruits and vegetables that we can eat. Done. There you go. I solved the crisis.
There you go. Well, I know Jenny mentioned earlier that fruits and vegetables are supposed to be going up in price, while meat is supposed to be going down in price. So, I mean, that just doesn't jive with our new Canada Food Guide at all. Feels like a big ship to turn around, but I think that we're getting there with a lot of the plant-based protein. I mean, a lot of the fast food places selling Beyond Burgers and Impossible Burgers and for all those other kinds of things that they're selling at Kentucky Fried Chicken, things that I never thought I would see.
Even there, they're more expensive. And our system right now is so elitist. I mean, to eat healthy, it costs more money.
Where
the the people, you know, people living near the poverty line, a lot of indigenous communities, they can't afford to eat the way that our government is suggesting that they eat to be healthy. Our government says this is the best way for you to eat to live a long, healthy life.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to make it hard for you to do that. Right? Like I'm a single dad. It'd be so much cheaper for me to just go to McDonald's and get Happy Meals every day. And there are people that do that. And those are the people that are having the biggest health issues are, you know, people that are living in low income areas.
Mm-hmm.
And then as a country with universal health care, our taxpayers are then paying again for them to get healthy or to take care of them when they're sick, because our tax dollars were just spent on making them sick. Like it's this double, it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make sense.
We're paying twice. Mm-hmm. We're paying twice, billions and billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm. Medical cover, yeah, for our medical as well.
We're causing it and then paying to take care of it.
Ironic. Human beings, gotta love them.
Ironic, I guess, would be a polite term.
Yes. I want to thank you all, Jenny, Jeff, and Ben, for joining me today on Animal Voices. I'm hoping that you will continue on your journey because it sounds like you've got a really good plan. And I think that it's really something that we need. And to be honest with you, I saw last year, before you had the first session on Parliament Hill, I saw it advertised and I thought, that's what's needed. I think this is the kind of thing that we need, and building that coalition as we go to all move in the same direction for the planet, for the animals, for our health.
We're actually, because a lot of this, you were speaking a little bit about it with Jeff, is, you know, provincial subsidies, there's even municipal subsidies, is that we realize that we can't, you know, three of us are in Ontario, we can't reach across this entire country ourselves. So what we're actually doing is we're working on opening some provincial chapters. And we do have three of them in the works, but if any of your listeners might want to get involved in this, thinks they could help provincially, we actually don't have anything lined up in D.C. Of those, you know, that should be one of the easiest ones, right? It's a more progressive province, and there's a big animal rights.
Big animal rights, so, big environmental.
We've got three other provinces, but yeah. So if anybody in D.C. thinks they could get something up for the province, that'd be fantastic.
Okay, I'll put that on our website too. You know, there's a lot of us are pretty busy right now fighting the pipeline still, but we can make time.
Yeah, keep on that.
We are.
You got my support. We are.
It's been a very protracted fight, though. So thanks very much.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having us.
We'll talk again.
Thank you, Carol.
I've been speaking with Jenny Henry, Ben King, and Jeff Donkervoort of Nation Rising. For more information, check out their website at nationrising.ca or our website, animalvoices.org. Well, here's a little good news to end the show. A two-week-old baby goldfinch bird arrived at the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center in Utah in an Uber. Why? Well, the man who found the goldfinch, Tim Crowley, was sitting outside having a few drinks with friends when the bird fell out of the sky. He said he couldn't locate the nest, so he contacted the Wildlife Rehab Center, and they said to bring him or her in. But since Tim had too many drinks to drive, he called an Uber to take the baby bird to the rescue center. The rescue center director said the baby bird is doing great and will be ready for release at the end of the summer, just before migration. Thanks, Tim, for being not only conscientious, but also compassionate. You have been listening to Animal Voices Radio Show on 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us for next week's show on Friday, July the 26th, when Elise will give us the buzz on bees. We'd love to hear from you. Keep connected with Animal Voices on Facebook, Instagram, or through our website, animalvoices.org. You can download our previous shows from our website or through iTunes and Google Play. Our program is brought to you today by our sponsor, Edible Planet. Edible Planet is a Vancouver-based education campaign and TV series to teach people about the world's most powerful edible plants and the fascinating people who bring them to market.
Food is the world's most powerful tool to share the wealth and chronic illness, regreen the planet, and create lasting world peace. Now is the time for a plant-based economy, because on this big, beautiful, edible planet, the food we eat can change the world. To close the show today, we'll leave you with the song, On the Road to Find Out, by Cat Stevens. Thanks for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember, be kind to the animals. Stay tuned now for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
What I could find out, I left my folk and friends with the aim to clear my mind out. Well, I hit the roundy road, many kinds I met there, many stories told me how. Yes, the answer lies.